when to what to put on. Does everyone have their paper for this class? Yes, and they have some sort of a pen or something? All right. Hare Krishna. Okay, so now we're going to chapter 4. So chapter 4, as you may remember, follows chapter 3. And in chapter 3, Arjuna was still very indecisive about whether or not he wanted to follow what Krishna had asked him to do. Now, before we go any further, I would like to go back over a little bit the topic that we studied yesterday, because the two classes really come together. So, yesterday evening, we heard in very, very brief, unfortunately, because Bhagavad Gita is such an elaborate subject that if you're going to speak on one section of Bhagavad Gita, immediately you feel a little foolish because there's so much more. And so whatever you're presenting, it just seems like a drop. But we were hearing about how Krishna had explained to Arjuna his position, who he is. And I was thinking this morning when I was chanting my japa, apart from people who say things that are unfounded in truth, nobody has ever said that they are who Krishna says he is. There are many people come from India, unfortunately. Srila Prabhupada told us that India was the place where you would find a god standing on every corner. So there are many people say, I am God, this is God, everywhere all God. But then when you ask them, can you show me something? What can they show? Perhaps they show some magic. They make a little something appear. And because we have very poor intelligence, that little bit of magic they show, it makes people stunned and they think, oh, this person really must be God. But nobody says, I can lift up a hill. And you say, can you show me yourself lifting up a hill? A very small hill will be all right just to begin with. You can lift it up by your mystical powers. But they can't do it. They can't do anything. They can only bewilder the mind because they have some yogic siddhi. So they can bewilder the minds of people to believe that they must be God and give them some money. Because after all, God needs money. So we have to give him some money. But nobody says what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. I am the source of everything. Everything rests on me. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. These are all my separated energies. They're mine, but they're separated from me. It means that they're over there, but they're mine. And then he says, everything rests on me. I know everyone, but me, no one knows. And he explains in the middle section of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7 to chapter 12, is the most important part of the Bhagavad Gita for understanding Krishna himself. In the first section, he's teaching Arjuna how to act in this world, which is very important for us. We need to know that. In the middle section, he's saying, I will tell you now about myself, so that by remembering me, you can come to me. And in the last section of Bhagavad Gita, the last third, he's teaching Arjuna Gyan. He's teaching him how the modes of nature, the goodness, sattva, rajas, tamas, how they bind us so that we see in a certain way. He's teaching and teaching and teaching, and at the end, at the very end, then Krishna asks Arjuna, he says, have you understood? And if Krishna had said, if Arjuna had said, no, I don't understand, then Krishna, Srila Prabhupada says, Krishna is prepared to teach him Bhagavad Gita all over again. Until he actually understood. who he is, who Krishna is, and who he is, who Arjuna is, and what is his position, what is the relationship between them. So yesterday we heard in brief that Krishna had shown Arjuna his position, and Arjuna was saying, I accept it. Indeed, as we were reading in the verse, he said, only you know yourself. By your chit shakti, or your eternal powers, you can understand yourself. You are the Supreme Person, the Father of everyone, the controller of everything, the Deva of the Devas, and ultimately you are the Jagatpati. So we did a little bit of work on that, writing down what those words meant, either directly from the Bhagavad Gita page or from our own understanding. Today, as I said, we're going to speak about our position. Why is it so difficult for us to accept Krishna? It's difficult for us to accept Krishna because we cannot understand him, because he's beyond our brain. Our faculties can't access him. Like if you want to look up any subject nowadays, you just put into the Google and you'll find out about that subject, right? You can look up mining in Western Australia. You can look up bears in China. You can look up anything and you'll find out some information. So that means that through my intelligence, I bear down on that subject and I analyze the subject and I look at it from all angles. You see, there's the subject. I'm bearing down with my intelligence. I analyze it from all different angles, look at it and study it and so forth. And then I write something about it so that people can understand something about this subject that I have examined with my intelligence. But Krishna is saying, I am the source of your intelligence. You cannot put me under a microscope because I'm the source of the microscope. I'm the source of everything. And so here we are, we have this predicament that we're used to doing it this way. I study, I learn, I find out something. And here Krishna has sort of tipped everything upside down and said, no, you can't study and learn about me. So then we say, wait a minute, you say you can't study and learn about me. He says, yes, you can't use your intelligence to analyze me, to dissect me, to put me in a box, to make a specimen of me, to take a sample of me, to see if you like me or not, to see if you believe if I'm existing or not. You can't do this to me because I am beyond your senses. Your senses don't work like that. So then, how can we understand Krishna? So some people think that, oh, what's the use even to try to understand God if he's like that? If he's so aloof that he won't let me control him and understand him and analyze him, what's the use of him? He has no value to me. I've got my life. Let me just get on with my life. I'll get a PhD in some subject. I'll become happy in this way and that way. And God is just, he's just up there doing his thing, making everything work if he's there at all, and he's not relevant to me. So there's a reason that we think like that. And that reason that we think like that is our problem. It's not his problem. He says, I am like this. We say, okay. So why do we say, okay, and we don't really particularly care about him? This verse will help us to understand this. So let us read together. Vitaraga bhaya krodha manmaya mamupashrita bahavo jnana tapasya bhuta madbhavamagata Vitaraga bhaya krodha manmaya mam upachrita bahavo jnana tapasya putta madbhavam agata Vita, freed from raga, attachment, bhaya, fear, krodha, and anger. Matmaya, fully in me. Mam, in me. Upashritaha, being fully situated. Bahava, many. Jnana, of knowledge. Tapasya, by the penance. Puta, being purified. Matbhavam, transcendental love for me. Agata, attained. Being freed from attachment, fear, and anger. Attachment, fear, and anger. Being fully absorbed in me. And taking refuge in me. Many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me. And thus they all attained transcendental love for me. Now, what we're going to do is I'm going to read with you something about this raga, vaya, and krodha. Because these are really primarily what is stopping us from approaching or loving or relating appropriately to Krishna because of these three qualities. And Krishna is saying, you have to give these three things up. And we'll see as we study further, it's not so easy to give them up. And he tells us how we should continue if we wish to give them up. So Prabhupada says, at the beginning, it is very difficult for a person who is too materially affected to understand the personal nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. It's very difficult. So do you sometimes feel like that? It's very difficult. So then, you see, just like in mathematics, you say this number, A equals 2, B equals 4, therefore A plus such and such equals such and such, and you can make a formula. So when we feel that it is very difficult for us to understand the personal nature of the Supreme Lord, we can understand A equals B, I must be too materially affected. Otherwise, this is the formula being given. If you have this, you won't have this. So I have this. Okay. So this we first must accept, that our problem is like that. Our problem is that we're too affected by this material energy or this atmosphere which we find ourselves in and we're absorbed in all the time. Three qualities are mentioned here. The first one is rag or attachment. Generally, people who are attached to the bodily conception of life are so absorbed in materialism that it is almost impossible for them to understand how the Supreme can be a person. Such materialists cannot even imagine that there is a transcendental body which is imperishable, full of knowledge, and eternally blissful. So, does anyone have any comments on this particular paragraph? Why is it that they cannot understand the Supreme can be a person? Why would they have trouble understanding this? Yes. They consider that a person is a person, a material person, and so God can't be a person. Yeah. You know, when we were in Hong Kong, when we first went to Hong Kong, we were trying to make the first Chinese Back to Godhead magazine. And in the Chinese language, there was no character. There was no, because Chinese is like, alphabet isn't like A, B, C, D. They're like characters, and each character has a meaning, and you put them together and you make a sentence. There was no character for the conception of a personal God. There was no such idea in the culture there. So it was very difficult. And when the first devotee was writing on this subject, he had so much difficulty because people would ring us up even when they read the magazine. They couldn't make any sense of it because there was no way to convey to them that God was a person. So this is very difficult because so much focus, so deep focus for such a long time on this world as everything. Intense and deep focus, this world as everything. So when you say to such a person, and God is a person as well, they think, what are they talking about? Maybe they have a friend whose name is Mr. God, and he's a person as well. But God, how can God be a person? So they can't accept this idea, because so much attachment to myself as a person, and I have faults, and I do things wrong. And if God steals my goodness, well, how can I trust him? If you hear that he steals butter or he tells lies, then you immediately must think these are very cute folk stories. They're very cute. Every culture has their little folk stories that you tell the children when they're growing up. And the children like those stories. And of course we as adults know that these stories are just made pretty much for children. But we cannot accept them. Can you put the... there's one on raga. Okay. So the point is that the definition of this word raga, or attachment, it's something that you spontaneously are drawn to without going through the faculty of your intelligence. If you have to think about it first, that's not raga. If I think, do I like this person? Maybe I like this person. Let me think about it for a while. That's not raga. Raga is when you see something, just like a child sees an ice cream, and they say, I want that. This is attachment. Attachment in that sense is not rational. It's not an intelligent choice. It's a choice that we feel very, very attracted to have, whether it's intelligent or not. So this makes it a little difficult for us. Raga, down the other end. Not Maya, raga, that's right. Prabhupada says, in the lower stage of our life, when we do not know what I am, I consider this body myself. This deluded conception of life, that I am this body, this is deluded conception. And when we have got too much attachment for this deluded conception of life, this is called raga, rag. Mostly people, generally, they are acting in this material world with this conception that I am this material body. So they are working whole day and night for making a comfortable life of this material body. So they are called in the stage of raga, attachment. Attachment. Now, one of the things, as I mentioned, that Srila Prabhupada liked to use, a word he liked to use all the time, was misconception. And one of the phrases he liked to use all the time was, you are not your body. And I remember as a young person hearing this term, we would also repeat it because, you know, when you study, you repeat. But having not even the slightest idea what it meant, I'm not my body. You could say it and say it and say it, but our thinking goes on as if I am my body. I do everything for the pleasure of myself as my body. And because I'm my body, this is my son, this is my daughter, and this is my house, and I am an Australian, and everything else spreads out from there. One time, I was listening to Srila Prabhupada, and I was reflecting on the fact that I, after so many years, I don't seem to have changed my view even slightly. I don't seem to have got beyond this point. And I was concerned, and I was listening to Srila Prabhupada. He was in Nairobi, in Kenya. And he was speaking to an audience, and the person who was asking him a question, the recording was very poor. But this speaker in the audience seemed to go on and on and on, and I couldn't understand what he was saying. Clearly an Indian, of Indian origin, but his question was not clear on the recording. And finally, Srila Prabhupada stopped him. And he said to him, "Have you seen your father?" And the man went on again. And then Prabhupada said to him, he said, "When your father is lying on his deathbed, and then he leaves, and everyone is crying, saying, 'Oh, my father has passed on,' I will come and say, 'No, no, your father is right here. Look, your father is right here.' And you will say, 'No, no, no, my father has passed on, he has gone.' And I will say to you, 'This is the father that you knew and loved throughout your life. He's still here.' And you will say, 'No, he has gone.' And I will say to you, 'That means you have never seen your father.'" And when Prabhupada said that, the whole audience cheered and clapped. It was so powerful. Because all of a sudden, it was like the concept got through to them. Oh. And when a concept gets through to you, it's so powerful, because at that moment, you can do something with it. Of course, again, we might forget. Now listen, Champ, if you want to play, you can sit outside and play as much as you want. Okay? Because it's difficult to sit in a class. But it's difficult to give a class if you're playing right there. Okay? So, this is what we actually want. We want to hear, and when the concept, when it hits us, when it penetrates, then suddenly we can move forward. And until that time, we keep hearing. We keep hearing, "It didn't work for me this time," but we hear again and again and again. And one day, something will just like fit into place. So this attachment, mostly Prabhupada says, most people in the whole world, that means everyone practically, is on this level. And what does Prabhupada call it? In the lowest stage of our life. The lowest stage of our life. Well, we think the lowest stage of my life is when I don't have a degree and I don't have a good job. And I don't earn a big income. And my children, perhaps they're not going to the best possible school. And I don't have a nice house. And I don't have a very big, comfortable car. Then I'm in the lowest stage of my life. But Prabhupada is saying, when you do not know what you are, and you consider this body as yourself, that is the lowest stage of life. So this is called raga, or attachment. Attachment to the bodily concept of life. And we're very attached. Believe me, we're deeply, deeply attached. Because everything that we possess is an extension of this bodily concept of life. So there's a great deal of hesitation to alter this. Because if I alter this, what will happen to all my things? They're all mine. They're all adjuncts of me. And in India, much, much more than you see in the West, people are very, very careful in raising their children and maintaining their family. So this appears, on one level, to be greatly unselfish, that they're so caring for their family members. But the difficulty is that underpinning their care for their family is the idea that this family is mine. So if you were to examine and you see in a community that everyone is caring for everyone, then you can see an act of unselfishness. But when I'm thinking that this family is mine, then Prabhupada explained, this is just an extension of my selfishness. Because first there's I, me, this is me, and second, there's mine. So mine and I come together. So if we're going to understand Krishna, we have to actually attempt to understand this very, very basic but very difficult to understand point, that I exist beyond the body. And Prabhupada would give one example after another. He would teach from this side, teach from that side. And of course, because we're not fast learners, we would still return to the same understanding as before, but a little bit moved. I had an interesting experience personally. In 2003, I had a friend, and she was very ill, and she was in the last stages of terminal cancer. So we traveled together, and we ended up in India. And in Vrindavan, she left this world. So I was returning to Perth alone. And when I got on the aeroplane, I sat down, and it was a little eerie feeling because the seat next to me was empty. And I knew why the seat next to me was empty. And then some young man got on the plane. He looked kind of Indian. He turned out to be Jewish. Young, kind of seeker type of a person. And he came and he passed by and he sat down in the seat. So after a little while on the journey, I turned around and looked at him and thought, maybe I should speak to him. And finally I said to him, do you know why that seat was empty? And he said, no. And he said that air hostess said I could move from there to here. So I said, that seat was empty because I was traveling with my friend and she's passed away. And so we came together, we were two seats together, and now this seat is empty. So we began a conversation about the nature of the soul and the body. And he was an interested person, so we went backwards and forwards talking about soul, body. And at a particular point, it became so crystal clear to me that the soul and the body were different at the time of death. Because this person no longer was there, and the body had already been burnt. And it was as if now I saw something leave the body, and the body was inert. And then the body that was previously my friend was suddenly taken away and burnt. And some moment, something left the body. And then after that, the body was finished. So at the time of death, if anyone has the misfortune or good fortune to be with somebody at the time that they pass from this world, it's so clear. And it made me think, if it's true at the time of death, it must be true at the time of life. So if I could assimilate this concept that Prabhupada is asking us to understand, it may help me to understand the spiritual nature of Krishna as a person and myself as an eternal servant of Krishna beyond this present body which I hold as me. This is called attachment. Now let us go to the second of these qualities that are mentioned here. This is bhaya, or fear. In front here on the paper we have, because they are too materially absorbed, the conception of retaining the personality after liberation from matter, it frightens them. When they are informed that spiritual life is also individual and personal, they become afraid of becoming persons again, and so they naturally prefer a kind of merging into the impersonal void. This is a kind of fearful stage of life, devoid of perfect knowledge of spiritual existence. This is called fear. And Prabhupada over here, he says, by her means, there are persons, transcendentalists, who are culturing transcendental knowledge. But they are very much afraid of conceiving. Conceiving means they're very much afraid of the concept, the idea that there is another world, which is the spiritual world, and it is also similar like this world. And the personality of Godhead is there, and we have to go there, and we have to live as his servitor. Servitor. I don't want to be a servitor. I don't want to go to that place. So we carry the ideas of this world to that world. Therefore, we are afraid. There are many transcendentalists who like the impersonal conception of the Supreme Truth. As soon as personal conception of the Supreme Truth is presented there, they are afraid of it. So here we have two things. That transcendentalists, they don't like this idea that there's another world similar to this world and there's a supreme person there and I will serve him. They don't like this because they carry impressions of this world because they think this world is everything. They carry impressions and they think, servant, oh my goodness. It would be like, we all have servants. Sometimes in India we have servants at home. We may treat them nicely, we may not treat them nicely. Anyway, I don't want to become a servant. It would be a terrible thing. Imagine if I wrote home to my mother and father and said, I've come to Australia and learnt to be a servant. They would be horrified. So no, I can't be a servant. I have to become something important, up and up and up, successful in society. I can't go down. That would be terrible. And so when you're told that, but religious, this is a religious conception, that there's a supreme spiritual world, it doesn't, you're not too much interested in this. It frightens one. And the other side of that, as we mentioned on the paper, is that if somebody's had a difficult life, if somebody's suffering, we see sometimes somebody doesn't have a happy life, they're struggling in so many ways, in getting along with people, or they don't have much success. And so if you tell them that after this life you'll be a person again, they think, oh my gosh, I've had such a difficult time and now you're going to tell me that forever and ever and ever I'm going to have a difficult time. No, I can't accept this. I think, in my view, that when I become perfect, it's like going to sleep. You know, after a hard day, when you're under a lot of tension and you can't resolve something, what a relief it is just to go to sleep. And then you just try and forget everything. So they think this is actually the perfection, to just forget everything and become just now sort of like, it's all finished now. It's all over. This is called Maya. Number three, Krodha. Anger. Being embarrassed by so many theories and by contradictions of various types of philosophical speculation. So many theories, so many concepts, they become disgusted or angry and foolishly conclude that there is no supreme cause and that everything is ultimately void. This is on the paper. What is the main point there on the paper one? What do they conclude? It's all useless. It's all just a waste of time. Why? So many beliefs. Somebody told me this the other day. They said, everybody has a belief. How are you going to tell me your belief is any different from theirs? Some people believe in this religion, that religion, so many things. Some people believe just in themselves. Some people believe this, they believe that. What on earth, why should I have to listen to and believe your belief as being better than anyone else's? So in this class, what we're trying to do is bring these things up for you so that you can examine introspect a little bit on your own condition at this point and see how these things are actually present within you. So now let's look on the board and see a little more information on this same subject. Krodha means there are other persons who are neither impersonalists nor personalists. They're not interested in becoming one, going to sleep in the supreme spiritual end, and they're not interested in having a spiritual anything. They just don't believe in anything. They are what are called more or less atheists. Atheists means they don't believe in any transcendental nature. That means, for your understanding, that means they don't accept the principle of consciousness. They don't accept that there's anything conscious beyond the body. And so when the body dies, it's all over for them. That's it. Finished. Never live again. Never have any future. Just nothing after that. Therefore, they simply concern themselves with this material body. Just like Buddha philosophy. Buddha philosophy does not accept the existence of the soul. Buddha philosophy says that this material body is a combination of matter. Now, as soon as the matter is dissolved, then the feelings of happiness and distress are gone. So here is another conception that gets in the way of our understanding Krishna. There's nothing beyond this life. I don't believe in a soul. I don't believe in anything. I'm just here and then I'm gone. Finished. So now, what I want you to do is go to exercise A and write a paragraph. Find your page. Write a paragraph on each trait and how it affects your spiritual practices. If you can't think of anything in that way, if nothing is coming to write, then try to write something from here to summarize what you've understood of these three qualities. I will give you 10 minutes. All right. So when you're ready, we can continue. So this first part of our class, we have discussed this Vita, becoming free of raga, maya, and krodha. So then the question is, if we've identified that we have a problem with any of these or all of these, which I think all of us will find there's a little bit of Vita, there's a little bit of raga, maya, and krodha in all of us, then the question is how to become free of this. And Srila Prabhupada, in his purport, he does mention this. He says, one has to get rid of the three stages of attachment to the material world. The first stage, the raga, is he defines as negligence of spiritual life. The second stage, fear, is fear of a spiritual personal identity. And the last one, the conception of void that arises from the frustrations in life. Prabhupada says, to get free from these three stages of the material conception of life, one has to take complete shelter of the Lord. Now this is difficult because we're finding ourselves being, like two magnets brought together where we're being sort of reacting like that, and someone is saying, the solution is you just take shelter. And we're saying, but we're struggling to take shelter, so what should we do? So Srila Prabhupada says, by the slow process, unfortunately, the slow process of devotional service, under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, under proper guidance, one can attain the highest stage. Now we can understand why it is slow. Prabhupada was saying in the lowest stage, and he was describing us, and now he's saying it will take some time to get to the highest stage. So we can understand this in a car. If we're going uphill, we keep it in the first gear. You have to go a little slow because it's an uphill drive. So to come out from this lower stage to go to the top, it will take some time. We can expect that. And we have to be willing to accept that it's going to take some time for us to change. But there's a process of change. And if we take part in that process of change, the time involved will be lessened greatly. And of course, if we don't take part in that process of change, then we're not going to change because we're just going to keep going like this. If we want to go upwards, we have to be willing to move towards a higher level of understanding. So can we see the all the different names? In 1974, Srila Prabhupada was traveling throughout the world, going to India, Australia, he went to Europe and America. And during that year, he lectured on this particular verse, I think, 5 or 6 times. So when I was preparing for this class, I researched on the internet, on the folio database, those lectures. And the comments that we're seeing here up on the board are comments that came from his classes on this particular subject. He spoke in Mumbai, he spoke in Geneva, he spoke in Rome, he spoke in Vrindavan, he spoke in Calcutta. And each time he emphasized different things. When he was speaking in Rome and Geneva, he mostly spoke about these Raga, Bhaya, and Krodha. Because the people he was speaking to, they were very, very, very new to his Krishna conscious understanding. And so he had to speak about the things that are holding us back. But when he was speaking in Vrindavan, he spoke more about what we could achieve if we could go beyond this. He spoke about the bhava, the stage of bhava. Now, we will see. The Mad Bhavam Upasrita one. Yeah, that one. Mad Bhavam means the nature in which Krishna is there. This means in the spiritual realm where Krishna is there. He's here also. He's here. But he's not visible to us here. In fact, he is visible to us here. He's visible to us in the form of the deity. But he's not visible when you look at the sky and you look at the trees and you look at the landscape. Generally, you'll think, oh, it's a beautiful day today. Look at the trees. It looks so nice. And we won't think, oh, this is all Krishna's energy. And look, I am seeing him in it. Generally, people don't think like that. So this is where Krishna is invisible. But there's a place, a nature in which Krishna is there. In this material nature, although Krishna is there, but we do not understand. We cannot see Krishna. That is material. Material means forgetfulness of Krishna. But when you remember Krishna, even in this material world, then it becomes spiritual. When you remember Krishna, this material world is no longer a place of tribulation. It's no longer a place where you feel that everything belongs to you, this is me, and this is mine. But it's a place in which one acts as a servant of that personality who has created everything. Prabhupada says, then you see this world like the mother seeing the shoes of her child. You see, oh, this is Krishna's. Hasn't he made a beautiful arrangement of this and a beautiful arrangement of that? And everything becomes something to enhance your sense of love for Krishna because he's so intelligent. Just like the temple. This temple is the opportunity of remembering Krishna. Here is worship of Krishna. Here you can remember Krishna. Here is the inmates of this temple. They are chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare, Hare. So that is called Mam Upashrita. So the next line, as you see, Man Maya Mam Upashrita, refuge in me. They have taken the shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. And Man Maya, they are always thinking of Krishna. This is the facility in this world where everyone is thinking of themselves and their family and money and entertainment and success, and so many material things are always being thrust upon us. One time I heard Radhanath Maharaj used a wonderful term. He called it the weapons of mass distraction. So the mass distractive elements are always there, pulling our attention here, there, there, here, so that we have no time and no thought for Krishna. But if we take shelter of the temple, this is the slow process of devotional service. If we take shelter in the right way of the temple and the deities in the temple and render service to them, then slowly we learn how to take shelter of Krishna and also to think about Krishna. Man Maya Mam Upashrita. And the next line of the verse is Bahavo Jnana Tapasya Puta Madbhavam Agata. Bahavo means many, and Jnana Tapasya. By the process of many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me. So if you look at your first page, you'll see. They became free of these three things, attachment, fear, and anger. And they became fully absorbed in me and took refuge in me. How? By becoming purified by knowledge of me. Many, many people. So that's reassuring, because here we are and we may be thinking, my gosh, this is a lot to ask of me. I don't know if I can do this. And Krishna is saying, no, many, many, many people have done this in the past, and now you can do it too. You have to have knowledge of me, jnana tapasya. Now, again, when Srila Prabhupada was speaking in Western countries, he particularly took these two words, jnana and tapasya, and he separated them. He spoke of jnana and tapasya. And when he spoke of tapasya, he spoke of following regulative principles. Because as Westerners, we did not lead a lifestyle based on these cultural beliefs, cultural rules. So he emphasized that you have to give up eating meat. You have to stop smoking cigarettes. You have to stop drinking alcohol. You have to do this, you have to do that. And of course, all the Westerners would feel the difficulty of this, because these habits have been ingrained in their culture from such a long time. But yourselves, you're coming from the Indian background, so obviously you will not have taken up any of these bad habits. Right? If you have, by chance, then you must also do tapasya. You must try to avoid these things. And if, of course, you have never, ever, ever lived a life of debauchery like this, then the tapasya is obtaining the jnana. That is the tapasya, to obtain knowledge of me. So many of the acharyas in the past who have spoken on this verse, to whom Srila Prabhupada was referring when he was writing, they did not talk about this tapasya in the way he was mentioning it, because they were coming from Indian culture and these things need not to be said. So they explained that the tapasya was to learn about Krishna, to understand who he is. So studying Bhagavad Gita is so very important. Because without understanding from Bhagavad Gita, when we're saying that you cannot take Krishna and analyze him, you cannot look up Google and find out all about the subject matter, you actually have to hear from a pure source, and that pure source is Krishna himself. And as we said yesterday, coming down through a chain of disciplic teachers who have not changed the essence. When Srila Prabhupada separates Gyan and Tapasya, he does so for his current audience when he's preaching in the West. But he does not change the essence. So there is a difference. You may have to change your subject matter to meet the approval or understanding of a particular audience, but you cannot change the truth, the essence. If you do that, then as Prabhupada said yesterday, it will all be spoilt. And people from India will be thinking, because the essence has been changed so many times, so many interpretations of Bhagavad Gita, and so people in India think this is primitive, old-fashioned. My great-grandmother may have been interested in bhakti, but we are modern men and women, and we are learning how to get along analytically in this world. So we cannot go backwards. This would be the greatest embarrassment to our family members if we were to turn towards the old things. But this is not correct. And therefore, this knowledge, developing this knowledge, is a little bit of a tapasya, even for you. Because you have to stand firm against so many misconceptions and wrong ideas in your own culture. Many, many persons, Prabhupada says, in the past, became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. Now, can we see again the series of documents there? Okay, how to go there? Prabhupada is speaking in one of those lectures. Beyond this material world, which is subjected to these rules of change, rules of six changes, there is another world which is Sanatan. Does everyone know what those six changes are? Anyone doesn't know what the six changes are? Birth, then you grow, then you sort of stay, yes, you get kind of successful and stay, then you produce some offspring, yes, then you get old, you start dwindling, and then finished, death. So these changes exist also in nature. You see, you buy a nice new dhoti or a nice new set of clothes, and for a while it looks really nice and the cotton is very healthy looking and, you know, it looks very strong, and then gradually, but, and it produces offspring, it starts to sort of fibers go everywhere and then for some time it's worth something, and then after a while you want to throw it away. So with cloth we see it, with objects we see it, with people we see it. We see these six changes. And because we see this, that everything is new and then it gets old, we assume in our not very deep thinking that the spiritual world also, sometimes we think, it'll be boring there. What would I do there all day? It must be boring, like it was when I was a young boy and I had to go to the temple and it was boring. So it would be so boring to go there because it would be just, you know. But Prabhupada says no. Sanatan means which is eternal. So actually there is existence of an eternal nature, like this nature which you are experiencing, and that nature is transcendental nature. The whole Bhagavad Gita scheme is to take you back to that transcendental nature, because you are transcendental, you are eternal, you are blissful, you are full of knowledge. But now we are covered. And now we have to go back to that eternal world which is full of knowledge and full of bliss. Can we go a little lower? Okay. So we have to prepare in that way. This is the policy of the human life. This, Srila Prabhupada would say, all over the world, boldly, without any fear, as the real representative of Indian culture, he would say, this is the policy of human life. The whole Bhagavad Gita scheme is to take you back to that transcendental nature. So let's see the series of documents again. This is Madbhavam, Madbhavam Agata. You can attain to that transcendental nature. This, the third one on the bottom, this is Bhava. This is Bhava, Prabhupada says. Oh, Krishna is so great. When you understand, when one understands the greatness of Krishna, how great he is, because people do not understand. They generally speak, oh, God is great. That is very good. At least one accepts that God is great. But how great he is, and what is the extent of his greatness, if we understand, then our regard and reverence for Krishna increases. This is how this Gyan Tapasya works. As we understand something of Krishna's qualities, naturally, our regard for him increases. And as it increases, naturally, the other qualities which are bothering us so much, they go down. Just like a scale. We see so many times in a shop in India, you put something, a weight on this side and the other one goes up or it goes down accordingly. So the one that is weighty goes down, or in this sense we'll use it the other way around. The one that is weighty becomes more intense, and the ones that are getting in the way become lessened. This is how it actually works. Just like we have got some friend, but if we know the opulence of the friend, how great he is, he may be a very big man, very big business magnate, or a minister. If we know, then, oh, you have got such a nice friend. Similarly, we should try to understand Krishna. We should try to understand. We have an inner guide. We should try to understand and connect with him. Instead of trying to get him to listen to us and tell us what we can do so we can enjoy life, we should try to turn the other way and ask him how we can serve. Now, I want to stop here and go to your page, next page. B, this is the second part of your writing. Write a summary of what you have learnt in this class. Now, be prepared, because on the next page, I'm going to ask you something else. So I'll tell you about them both at the same time. The final summary page is to be used after both seminars. Please fill this in and return it before the end of the retreat. You can fill it in later if necessary. You do not have to put your name on it. But I want you all to make this endeavor for your own benefit and for nothing else to fill this in. Because as you're filling it in, as you write yourself, just like as I prepare the class, I get more benefit than you do. Because you're only here for 1 hour. I have to spend so many hours studying to get ready for the class. So I get benefit. So now I want to pass that to you. So your benefit will come by writing your understanding. Or your lack of understanding, that's all right also. So this on this final page, A, write down any questions that these classes may have raised for you. Anything that your mind or your intelligence says, I'm not sure about that, write it down. B, note any areas where you need help in developing your spiritual understanding. Anything that you note that you need help with. Now, this is not going to be used for anything. Obviously, nobody's name is on anything. But this will help you, and it will help you if you feel that I have to give that to somebody. Because if you think, oh, I have to do this, oh, I haven't got time, you just put it away. But if I say to you, no, you have to give these all in, then everybody, because you're students, you know, students, they have to pass their exam. And you're not allowed to sit and look at the person next to you and see what they're writing. No cheating. Because it doesn't matter. The point is the exercise, not the answer. The answer is not even relevant. But that you go through the process will make benefit for you. So page one, now, write a summary of what you have learnt in this class. You can look at your notes. You can just write as much as you can. If you have a little or a lot, that's okay. But the second one, we'll give you 15 minutes for this. And the second one pertains personally to you. Okay, 15 minutes. Can we look at the tree analogy from Bhagavad Gita, and right after that we want to know how to get there, how to go there. Okay, so this analogy is coming from Bhagavad Gita, and it's meant to help us in our journey from the lowest stage of illusion, deluded, to the stage of actually understanding. Actually, this material world, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, is as a perverted reflection of the actual spiritual world. So if you see things in this world that you don't like, you think are unreasonable and unfair and cruel and harsh, you should understand they are not there in the spiritual world. There's a beautiful description of Nandagram given in one of the books written by one of our acharyas or teachers. And he keeps saying things like, when you use the word dosha, which means fault. It doesn't mean dosha. It means, and he gives another meaning to the word, he says, because there are no faulty people there. When you use the word mud, some word that means mud, it doesn't mean mud. It means cosmetics, because there is no dirtiness there. And he goes through in this way very beautifully describing words that refer to this world and saying it doesn't mean that there, because that quality is absent there. Because that is the real tree. You'll find in the 15th chapter that this material world is described as the obverted tree, whose root is upwards and the branches are downwards. Have you experienced this obverted tree, whose root is upwards and the branches and leaves are downward? Have you seen any tree like that? And then Prabhupada says, you have seen it, but you have forgotten. When you see a tree on the bank of a river or the bank of a reservoir of water, you find the reflection of the tree. It is just the opposite number. So similarly, this world, in the 15th chapter, it is described there, the obverted tree. That means that the real tree is there. The real tree is there. The real tree is going upwards. And the averted tree is going downwards. And so what is at the very bottom, the most base things in the material world, they are a perverted reflection of something in transcendence. Just like we hear that here in this world, Bhagavad Gita tells us there are three modes. They are passion and ignorance. And they go in that order, right? Goodness, passion, ignorance. So this is a reflection of the three qualities of the spiritual world, Sat, Chit, and Ananda. They go upwards. The real tree is Sat, Chit, Ananda, full of bliss, knowledge, and eternity. And they go down in the reflection. So Sat, Sattvagun, means very peaceful life, very shanti, shanti. That's very ideal. Rajagun, so much passion. Energy is good, not bad, but sometimes you get into trouble. And tamagun means bad habits and laziness, so it's not good. And yet, in English, there's a phrase that you might have heard which says, ignorance is bliss. Well, it is. It's like this to this. So we're down here, and we're meant to be up here on the real tree. And that's why Prabhupada says, slow progress. You can't jump like a monkey. You'll only, at the best you can do is you can jump up and down on the worldly tree, the illusory tree, but you can't enter here until you've been transformed. Transformed into what? Transformed into what you are. not transformed into what you aren't. You have to be cleansed first of your misconceptions. So accept the conceptions that Krishna is giving in Bhagavad Gita, and you will make slow but steady progress in spiritual life. Let's just hear the last one, how to get there. Beyond this material world, which is subject, oh, we've read this one, to the rules of six changes, there is another world which is Sanatan. We'll read it again. Sanatan means which is eternal. So actually there is existence of an eternal nature, like this nature which you are experiencing. And that nature is transcendental. The whole Bhagavad Gita scheme is to take you back to that transcendental nature. Because you are transcendental, you are eternal, you are blissful, you are full of knowledge. And now we are covered. Now we have to go back to that eternal world which is full of knowledge, full of bliss. And the last sentence, can we see the very last sentence? So we have to prepare in that way. That is the policy of human life. So I will leave you with this message to think of. Each one of us as an individual human being has to think about this. What is important for me in this life? What do I stand to gain if I win all the riches and fame and name of this world? Or if I actually tend towards wanting to understand my transcendental nature? Which one will I gain more from? All right. Thank you very much for your patience and your time and your very nice hearing skills. It was a pleasure to speak to you. Hare Krishna.